And welcome to Wise Guys. These guys know sports on this Monday, August the 10th, on the Wise Guys Show on the Worldwide Sports Network. Another day with the Wise Guys crew, myself and Mr. Clarence Nixon. What's up, Clarence, co-host?
Hey, yeah, what's going on, man? Happy Monday to you, man. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday to you as well. Everybody, remember going follow the Wise Guys on Twitter at WiseGuys_OH, also on Facebook, Wise Guys. And be sure to follow us on Wise Guys at These Guys Know Sports on Instagram. How was your weekend, bro? What'd you do? Tell me something special. Did anything happen this weekend that you want to share with us and our viewers?
Man, I missed a big party at my mama's house, man. Like, everybody came over her house. Like, the whole family came over on Saturday. And what I was doing on Saturday, I was just in the house resting, watching movies with the girlfriend and the kids. So I've just been chilling. But I missed a big party. But more than likely, I've just been chilling, you know, spending time with the family, you know, getting ready for our big trip this weekend. Going to Kentucky Kingdom. We're going to Kentucky Kingdom, man.
Oh, that'll be a blast. That'll be a blast.
Yeah, I'm getting ready for it this weekend, man. So I'm going to be pumped up all week, man.
That's what's up, man. Definitely. I had a pretty good weekend. I just kind of relaxed, and I watched a lot of basketball. A lot of basketball over the weekend, Clarence.
Yeah,
so I watched a lot of basketball. You know, I just kind of relaxed and, you know, chilled out, man. My Trey Mirror, he was out in Gatlinburg, so he had a ball. You know, he had a time. On a little family vacation. So Dad had some time just to chill out and rest, man. But listen, we got an action jam-packed show. We're going to talk about Luka Doncic versus the Greek Freak on Saturday night. That was a big-time matchup in the bubble that took place. Also, Amari Cooper, he says the Dallas Cowboys, they expect Clarence to have 3,000-yard receivers this year. We'll talk about whether or not we believe it can possibly happen. Also, later on the show, we're going to talk about the Sixers. As yesterday, Joel Embiid left the game against the Portland Trail Blazers with an ankle injury. It's already been reported that Ben Simmons has had surgery, so he's already left the bubble. So we'll talk about the Sixers as well later on the show. Also, it may not be no college football this year. So that's something else we're going to talk about as well. But we begin in the bubble in Orlando in the NBA as the Portland Trail Blazers beat the Philadelphia 76ers 124-121 yesterday evening. Dame Dollar dropped 51 points, 7 assists. Melo added 20, 7 rebounds. Josh Richardson had a great game, 34 points, 5 rebounds, 6 assists. So my question for you is, Clarence, as we begin the show, what was your reaction to Dame Dollar dropping 51 on the Sixers?
Well, what can I say again? Dame Dollar delivered again in the late. If you've been watching that whole game, man, he was just on fire. Like, he was, like, the lead impact of that team. Like, this was another great performance that he had. What, he had 45 before this performance, man? Man, Dame Dollar is on a mission, man. He's been on fire in this bubble. And they're really pushing to make a playoff push at them and the Portland Trail Blazers. And they're making some big noise. I'm not even going to lie. Like, Dame, he's making some big noise. Like, and I'm excited to watch, see what he's going to do again tomorrow.
Yes, but this performance for me, Clarence, was Dame redeeming himself, because Saturday afternoon, as I sat here at my house and I had my feet up, I was kicking it because I had to work Saturday night, so I had an off day where I could just watch my basketball and really, really have some nice takeaways and evaluate the game. I watched a meltdown that took place with Damian Lillard and the Portland Trail Blazers Saturday afternoon in the bubble against the LA Clippers team that did everything they could to hand Damian Lillard and the Portland Trail Blazers a victory. Make no mistake about it. Doc Rivers and the Clippers, they want Portland to be the eighth seed because they want Portland to push the Lakers in the first round, the distance in the first round of the playoffs. That way, LeBron will be expanding unnecessary energy and he may have less to offer as the playoffs go along, once they get later to the later rounds as well. So I think Damian redeemed himself yesterday with that 51-point performance because he knew he let his team down. And in a post-game press conference, that was one of the main things that he said. He said, I let my team down. I know I have to do better, and I will do better in this situation when it presents itself again. And that's what he did on Sunday evening against the Philadelphia 76ers team without Ben Simmons, without Joel Embiid. It would have been a travesty if the Portland Trail Blazers would have lost to the Sixers yesterday without Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. You have to win that game. You already choked against the LA Clippers C team. It was a C team out there, Clarence. Listen, I was watching the game. Doc Rivers sat Paul George with a little over 7 minutes left in the game. And Paul George, he was perplexed like the rest of us, wondering, do we even want to win the game? And the Portland Trail Blazers still couldn't close that deal. I was so disappointed in Dame and Melo and CJ for not being able to close the deal against the LA Clippers team without Paul George, without Patrick Beverley, without Kawhi Leonard. But they redeemed themselves yesterday with a much-needed win over the Philadelphia 76ers.
I definitely agree with you on that one. And before I get into that, man, I wanted to say this. I am so happy that we see a lot of NBA trash talking in the NBA. Like, I'm seeing that. I love what Damian Lillard and Paul George are going back on Twitter. Like, that's what we need. That's what makes the NBA more exciting. Like, you see other teammates talking trash to another teammate. I mean, not another teammate, but, like, a player on another team. Like, you see it. All the interactions to each other, you seeing them like really talk trash to each other because one of them, they wants to win it. And now what Damian Lillard stated, that Paul George jumped from team to team, he can't take the grind. That was something personal right there. I would have taken that personally, though, because I'm like, first of all, it's a business, it's NBA. And I get what you're saying, Damian Lillard, but at the same time, business is business. But Dame, he kept it 100 and humble, like, basically saying you don't have what it takes to grind on one team. So that was kind of like a big shade. But for Damian Lillard performing like this, I think if he keep performing like this, the Portland Trailblazers is going to make the playoffs. I have them making that 18 because the Grizzlies, they lost Jaren Jackson and they lost their four straight games, the first four games. So that was big. But I definitely see the Portland Trail Blazers making that eight seed, though.
Yeah, because when you look at the game yesterday, going up against the Philadelphia 76ers, Josh Richardson, he couldn't miss. He shot 6 of 10 from 3-point range. So he kept the Sixers in the game with this perimeter shooting. And I think it was like a little over 3 minutes left in that game. The Sixers had a 6-point lead. Dame Dollar said yesterday, not again. Not on my watch. And that's when he came through. For the Portland Trail Blazers, he had a dunk where he cut to the basket. Nurkic hitting down low in the paint. Nice cut to the basket. Dunked the basketball. Then he comes back on the ensuing possession. And Josh Richardson, I believe, fouls him on a 3-point shot. Dame Dollar hit the shot. 4-point play. He won the game. Dame Dollar made the plays necessary when he had to for his team. And he put his team on his back yesterday against the Philadelphia 76ers team that didn't even have either of his co-stars. You have to win that game. And he redeemed himself from that meltdown that took place Saturday afternoon. Because I was disappointed, Clarence. I was so deflated. I was so deflated because I'm like, I compare Damian Lillard to Steph Curry. And I'm thinking, Steph Curry, he ain't missing two free throws in a clutch moment down the stretch. Not at the free throw strike. He had a chance to ice the LA Clippers and put them in a position where they got to get a bucket from unproven players. No Paul George, no Kawhi Leonard, and he missed two free throws. It was a complete choke job. It was a complete choke job. And I don't blame Patrick Beverley and Morris and Paul George for laughing on the sideline seeing Dame miss those free throws. Why? Because they thought what we thought. He's going to make these two free throws and be up at least one and force us to have to go to one of our unproven guys to make a bucket in a clutch moment. And he missed both free throws. He missed both, but he redeemed himself yesterday with 51 points. But about the Dame Lillard and Paul George beef, Paul George needs to be careful. And I'm going to tell you why. Paul George ain't been out the first round since 2014, Clarence. Paul George needs to shut the hell up and worry about being a second star for Kawhi Leonard when the Clippers embark on this playoff run they're about to go on. He didn't even worry about being able to hit these big-time shots. I know Kawhi going to deliver. I believe in Lou Williams as well off the bench. I have my questions about Paul George. I'm a Paul George fan. I think Paul George is one of the best two-way players we have in the NBA. But, Paul George, you ain't been out the first round since 2014, buddy. You need to get it together. Well, don't worry about Dame Dollar in Portland because you got more pressure on you than he has on him because he got his team in the position to make the playoffs.
Hey, Paul George, I feel like he's going to finally break that streak of getting out the playoffs, and that's more likely going to happen this year. So, we already know your answer. Do you believe the Portland Trailblazers is going to make the playoffs?
Yes, I think the Portland Trailblazers made the playoffs. They have to play Luka and the Dallas Mavericks tomorrow, which will be a tough matchup. But I'm not
That's
sure.
That's big.
It's big, but I'm not sure if Rick Carlisle is going to play Luka because they already pretty much locked into the seventh seed. I think they might be a game and a half behind Utah for the sixth seed. But I think the Dallas Mavericks are – they know they're going to be the seventh seed. They know they're going to be playing the LA Clippers in the first round. So Rick Carlisle may sit Luka because Luka played a lot of minutes in the matchup the other night against Giannis. So he may rest Luka and Porzingis in these final two regular season games. But I think they'll beat the Dallas Mavericks because I don't think Dallas will even, you know, try to necessarily win the game. And then they got the Nets in the season finale. I think they'll take care of business against the Nets and they'll position themselves to have a play-in game against the Memphis Grizzlies. And I think the Portland Trailblazers would be the favorites in a matchup against John Moran and Grizzlies, me personally.
Yeah, they already beat them in the beginning of the season, beginning of this bubble. So we're going to expect Portland to at least make that eighth seed. But everybody, please go follow Wise Guys on Facebook, the Wise Guys and Instagram. These guys know sports. And Twitter, Wise Guys _ on 8. And also, don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube page at Wise Guys, as we are here live on the Worldwide Sports Radio Network.
One more thing, Clarence, real quick. The Grizzlies, I believe they have the Bucks in their season finale, and then tomorrow they play – I can't think of who they play tomorrow.
They play
another big-time team tomorrow. It's not going to be an easy matchup for them. So they could lose their – because you know the way the play-in game is.
The eight and the ninth.
Yeah, if the ninth seed has to beat the eighth seed two times. You have to beat them once to have another chance on the following day. So if the Portland Trailblazers take care of business – and they win these final two games, they can position themselves to where they only have to beat Memphis once. You see what I'm saying? Right now, they got to beat Memphis twice. But if they keep winning and Memphis slip up and lose a game, then they only got to beat them once. But let's not forget one more team because they won today. Devin Booker has been putting on a clinic. The Phoenix Suns, they are undefeated in the bubble right now. They're the only team left that's undefeated. Devin Booker is a superstar. I'm saying it right now. He is a superstar. And by the way, the NBA should be – they are ridiculous for fining Draymond Green. You know they fined Draymond Green for his comment saying that Devin Booker should want out of Phoenix. The NBA fined him saying it was tampering. Give me a break. Like, that's not tampering. Like, come on. The NBA should be ashamed of themselves.
Believe it or not, though, before we go to the next topic, I honestly believe if Memphis probably lose tomorrow, it's a slightly chance that – you can see Portland bumping, going to the eighth, and they being the ninth. Because, honestly, the Portland Trailblazers is a half a game behind the Grizzlies, and the Suns is one game behind the Grizzlies. So, it's getting very interesting in this bubble trade, but we go have to tune in and see what's going on from there. But we got to move on, brother. Man, we finally wanted to discuss this, man. You know, former Panther and Patriot Kyle Love stated that Cam Newton probably won't take Bill Belichick criticism. So tell me, what's your personal reaction to that?
I can understand where he's coming from. And I get it because he's played for the Patriots. He's also played with the Panthers. So he has some experience with Cam Newton. He has some experience with Bill Belichick. So I can understand where Kyle Love is coming from. Let me just read you this quote specifically so we can all our viewers know what Kyle Love actually said. He said, quote, "I don't feel like Cam can take the pressure of coaches talking down about his play. If he had a bad game in Carolina, the coaching staff wouldn't say much to him because they would have felt he could have be a little bit frail about it or maybe pout. They never really corrected to the point Bill used to correct Tom." That was Kyle Love out of the Boston Herald So I guess what he's basically saying is he's talking about the like, you know how Bill Belichick, he pretty much criticized Tom Brady the same way he criticized the 54th man on the roster. He didn't hold anything back because you are the star quarterback, and because you run us 6 Super Bowl rings, you get criticized just like the practice squad player gets criticized. That's pretty much what Kyle Love is saying here. He's basically saying that the way Bill Belichick treated Tom Brady, he treated him the same as he treated everyone else in the organization. And he's saying that he don't believe that Cam Newton will be able to handle that criticism. And I disagree with Kyle Love. And I'm going to tell you why. Cam signed up for this. Cam knows that he is in a position now where he's not going to get more opportunities if he doesn't play well in New England. He's not going to get many more because people are going to start giving up on Cam. He's going to get up more. He's going to get older in age. And people are going to say he can't stay healthy and so forth. I think Cam knows what he's signing up for playing with in New England. And I think he wants to play for a coach like Bill Belichick who can put together a system that can help Cam flourish on a football field. I think this is what Cam wants, to be quite frank. I don't think Cam would want to go to a dysfunctional organization like your Bengals. Yeah, I said it. Or like the Cardinals who haven't won anything. I don't think he would want to, or a Detroit Lions. I think he wants to be in a situation where there's structure, where we know who the man is, and that's Bill Belichick. I think Cam actually wants to be in a situation like he's in right now with the New England Patriots. I wouldn't say that he won't be able to handle the criticism from Bill Belichick. I think it's something that Cam Newton honestly will embrace.
Definitely. I like the response, Trey. I love the response. And let me say this real quick. I feel like, remember with the Feltzer dude, the Feltzer, what's his name, the podcast from Boston? Remember his comments saying that Cam Newton can't showboat and he should not be bringing that to New England because they're a winning culture? And now you got Kyle Love saying Cam Newton might not take his criticism. Like, I just feel like these type of people are being or overreacting and not letting Cam Newton be Cam Newton. Like, In my opinion, Cam Newton he's full to go. He's full to go for pads. He's full participant. He's been working out. And believe it or not, he's probably one of the most humblest guys in the NFL. And he's a very, like Josh McDaniels stated, he's a very smart NFL player that he knows the ins and out in the NFL and at football. So I just believe everybody is overreacting because it's Cam Newton, because they see the showboat of Superman. And they always think that might be a problem. How that's going to be a problem, and that's his personality. That's who we are. And I think people are overreacting to what he brings to the table. Look, Cam Newton is healthy. He wants to play football, and he wants to show everyone that he still got it, that he's still an elite quarterback in this in the NFL. So I just think everybody is overreacting. They saying all these say so, he say, she say, whatever. They're not even letting this man get on the field yet to even show what he's capable of. So I think a lot of people is overreacting about Cam Newton. This guy is the most humblest player and probably in the NFL. He wants to play football. And matter of fact, and believe it or not, he's definitely taking all these criticisms as motivation.
Yeah, and the thing is, you never know. Bill Belichick, he may embrace Cam Newton and his big personality. Like, everybody has this belief that Bill Belichick isn't going to allow Cam Newton to be himself. How do you know that? Maybe Bill Belichick knows what we know, and he knows at this point, I don't have Tom Brady anymore. So now I have to adapt. Because when Bill Belichick was winning Super Bowls with Tom Brady, you know, Tom Brady got some credit, Bill Belichick got some credit. So now everybody wants to know, was it more about Bill Belichick or was it more about Tom Brady? So if Cam Newton has some success in New England this year, any kind of success that he has, and the team has some success in the playoffs, Bill Belichick will get all of that credit. And people will say, oh, when Tom Brady was in New England, that was Bill Belichick. He was part of the reason why the Patriots had success, more so than Tom Brady. So Bill Belichick also has pressure on him, Clarence. He has pressure on him because he has to prove it wasn't all about Tom Brady. But and also, like I said, I think he knows in order to get the best that you're going to get from Cam Newton, you got to let Cam Newton be himself and have that big personality on and off the field. And I feel like if you let him be himself on the field and he can do his Superman celebration, I think you're going to get better results from Cam Newton. And I think it's going to be best for everybody. The Patriots organization, Bill Belichick, and Cam.
And one more thing, though, too, though, Trey. The thing is, they brought in Randy Moss, that was a very talkative receiver in the NFL. That was humble and that he's a tough competitor. And they brought in Antonio Brown, that's not crazy, but you know he had his problems in the past, and they were still like maneuver around that because he was a talented football player. But the point I'm trying to say is that before you start criticizing someone, let them show what they got on the football field, man, and actually listen to what they say and watch them. And don't just eat them up with so much criticism to make them think that they go follow them. They're not. Like, I think Cam Newton is in great shape. He's in great shape, and he's ready to play football. He's ready to prove everyone that he's still back. He's still a lead quarterback. And that's more about it. But do you believe – now, I did want to ask you this. Now, you know, the Patriots got the most players that's opt out the season. And earlier today, they signed the running back Lamar Miller. Do you still believe the Patriots are favored to win the AFC East? Like, come on. You still got them?
I'm going to be honest, Clarence. I'm a little worried. I'm worried. I'm worried. I was, but I am worried at this point because they got so many players that have opted out. I mean, it's a lot of players that opted out for them. And so I'm not so sure if they're going to be able to stay atop the AFC East. And also I want to say, too, we have to take down our expectations for Cam Newton because he's playing with a roster that now isn't very good. I mean, they got players that have opted out that are legitimate players on this team, like especially on defense. Hightower, you know what I mean? I think Patrick Chung, didn't he opt out as well? Yeah, I mean, they got players on their team that are key players to their success. I think we need to really evaluate our expectations for Cam Newton this season. I think now that these players have opted out, I think our expectations for Cam should go down. And whatever production that Cam gives us would be extra because now you have to overcome the odds and try to position the New England Patriots to be at the top of the AFC East. So if Cam can pull this off, Cam is officially back.
I think, but one for sure, though, I think New England still going to have some late signings before the season started because, you know, New England, they always pull something out the hat. So that's something that we got to keep in mind and maybe keep a tracker on, man, because – they definitely lost a lot of key players on offense and defense. I mean, they lost one of their best linemen, and Marcus Cannon, and that is going to play a role in their offense. Hey, so that is something that we got to keep an eye on right there, Trey. Definitely.
Yeah, because you don't even have the Patriots win. You didn't have the Patriots win the AFC East before all these players opted out, did you?
Nah, I had Buffalo winning. I got Buffalo coming out the AFC East. They trying to get their first. Woo! AFC East Division title since 1995. Ooh, wee.
So right now, if you had to rank the teams in the AFC East, who would be your projections for next year? From first to worst, who you got in the AFC East?
Believe it or not, man. Believe it or not, I still got it the same way, but it's a little different. I got Buffalo with one, New England number two, Dolphins number three, and four number Jets. I think the Jets are about to struggle. Probably the most out of that division because they lost one of their best players on defense and CJ Mosley decided to opt out the contract. I think they're about to struggle, man. They about to get hit. Miami, if Tua is healthy and he's starting and they're winning and all their signings pay off, they might have a legitimate chance. But the Patriots is safe like behind like the Buffalo Bills. I definitely got Buffalo coming out the AFC East, man.
I still got the Patriots winning the AFC East, but I am getting worried. I am getting worried, and damn it, I can change my pick at any moment if I want to, Clarence. I can change it, and I will. But some of these players, these notable players that opted out, linebacker Dante Hightower, safety Patrick Chung, offensive tackle Marcus Cannon, they have some key players on their team that have opted out. So we really, really got to reevaluate our expectations for Cam, because Cam isn't working with very much now. He isn't working with very much. And I had an issue last year with Bill Belichick and the Patriots organization because they didn't even surround Tom Brady with any legitimate weapons on the offensive side of the ball. This year, they still don't have any legitimate weapons. They got Julian Edelman. That's about it. That's about it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, who off
N'Keal Harry? They got a lot of young players.
Yeah, a lot of young players, but N'Keal Harry isn't ready. He isn't ready just yet.
I mean, he was injured most majority of his rookie season. This is his time to be the number one receiver, Trey. Realistically. He is projected to be the number one.
Yeah, let's get back to the NBA bubble. At Saturday night, Luka versus Giannis was a great matchup in the bubble. The Dallas Mavericks beat the Milwaukee Bucks in double overtime, 136-132. Luka finished with 36 points, 19 assists, 14 rebounds. Porzingis added 26 points, 11 rebounds. The Greek Freak had 34 points, 13 rebounds. Middleton dropped 21, 11 assists, 6 rebounds. So the question here is, Clarence, as we watched a great performance from Giannis and Luka on Saturday night in the bubble, what do you make of Luka's performance individually?
He's a bad, bad man, Trey. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. That young buck is a bad, bad man. Hey, but dude could have had 20 assists if he wanted to. I mean, his performance throughout this bubble, man, just been insane. Like, it's been crazy. He's been producing day in, day out. Like, he's been the number one option on that team, man. And he's been making the team and making the team play better. Look what you just said. Porzingis had 27 points. Like, he's actually balling. He's actually got everybody balling. And Tim Hardaway, he had 27 points. He's got these unproven players. Like, how you stated, they're balling, man. He's got everybody on this Mavericks team balling. He got them playing better. They even looking better. They're the number one offense in the NBA. The number one offense in the NBA in efficiency, in whatever rankings, whatever you got them in. But this guy, Luka, he is very special. He's 21 years old. He's doing so much. We got 17 triple-doubles up on the season right now. That's brilliant, man. That's brilliant. And he's only 21 years old. So this ain't what we seen for real, man. Trey, I'm going to be honest with you. Back-to-back triple-double, man, this guy is scary, man. He might be the best player under 25. One of the, like, probably top two.
Yes, Luka is playing great basketball. In this matchup, 36 points, almost 20 assists. He almost had 20 assists.
And like, he's a leading rebounder.
Yes, the lead rebounder, 14 rebounds. His plus minus, he was plus 12. And then also, I want to give some more credit also in this matchup to this kid, Dorian Finney-Smith. He dropped 27 points.
He had a nice
shooting game as well for the Dallas Mavericks. And, you know, Porzingis, he's getting his legs back under him, getting back into a rhythm and playing at that level that he was playing at pre-injury. He had 26 points in this game. He was minus 5, you know, while he was on the court in his plus minus. But in order for the Dallas Mavericks to ultimately reach their goal, and that's getting back in the championship contender conversation, they're going to need Porzingis to play at a superstar level. And I think in these few years coming up, Clarence, in the next 3 or 4 years, I think this Dallas Mavericks team has a legitimate chance to be legit championship contenders, and they should be in the championship conversation. I really do, because Luka is a superstar. He's a superstar. And when I look at all these young players that we have in the NBA, Zion, Morant, you know, Jason Tatum, Siakam. If I'm missing anybody, let me know. Jalen Brown, Devin Booker. He's on there. He's right there too, though. Devin Booker too. But when I look at all these young players that we have in this league, Trae Young, Donovan Mitchell, I got to be honest. I think Luka might be the best player that's under 25. He might just be. I've been saying Tatum. I've been saying Donovan Mitchell. And all due respect to those brothers. Those brothers are elite talents. But what Luka is doing is things that I haven't seen before. He's doing things that LeBron at his age wasn't even doing. This guy's averaging triple doubles. Like, the numbers that he's putting up is sensational. And there's another thing. It's always, every time I watch Dallas Mavericks, I always get a show. Like, when I watch Dallas, I see a show. Like, when they went up against Houston last week, they went to overtime against Houston, I believe, and they put up a lot of points in that game. The Dallas Mavericks, they score a lot of points, and mostly it's because of Luka Doncic. He positions himself to help his teammates get into the offense, and they get easy shots because Luka is so great at being able to score the basketball, and he's great at getting into the middle of the defense to where you have open shooters on the outside, like Curry, like Smith, like Porzingis. I like this Mavericks team, Clarence. I really feel like if we're talking about the next 5 years, they're a team that we need to start discussing in that championship conversation for sure.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you right there, man. That was a great response to what you said. But this guy, Luka, is on a whole different planet, man. And if you ask me, he probably is one of the best players that's under 25, like, right now, as we speaking right now. Like, what he brings to the table, I can't see it in no other star, man. And that is something that you will love to get out of a player that can pass, score, and rebound. Like, that is ridiculous. Like, that right there is an amazing stat. And believe it or not, like, he watched LeBron growing up. He see how LeBron carry his whole team, man. This what Luka is actually doing. He's carrying his team as being a leader in every category that's in basketball. Like, and this guy right here is the truth, Trey. Right? I ain't gonna lie.
To be honest, Clarence, these young players that we talk about in Zion, Morant, Donovan Mitchell, Jason Tatum, Siakam, you know, these players that we're talking about, Trae Young, as great as they aren't in the MVP conversation. Like, Luka is a legitimate MVP candidate. We got LeBron with the Lakers. We got Giannis with the Bucks. We got Harden with the Rockets. I would say Luka is a top five NBA MVP candidate. I also think Chris Paul deserves some MVP consideration as well for what he's been able to do with the Oklahoma City Thunder. But I would say Luka deserves to be in that top five MVP conversation. Seriously, if you take Luka off this team, they're a borderline playoff team. They might not even make the playoffs. With Luka, they're a legitimate contender, and I think they're going to make it tough on the Clippers. They ain't going to beat the Clippers, but Luka by himself can get you a game. Therefore, you might be able to get two out of the Clippers, depending on how serious they take the Mavericks, but we'll see what happens. But let's move on to the next question of this segment. This question is for you. Are you still confident the Bucks can win the East?
Look, man, I'm going to just keep it 100 with you, man. You know how people be saying, oh, this team locked in for this number one, number two seed. But the team that actually beat them or is beating them in the game, they find ways to beat them in the playoff. So when I look at it, like when I see Giannis and them as roommate, like before we got on the show, they was losing to the Toronto Raptors. They found something in the previous game, and they using it to their full advantage to beat this Bucks team. But I ain't gonna hold you. I am a little nervous for the Bucks because at the end of the day, you need to shoot the ball in the playoff to advance into the next round. That's what you need. And I am concerned. Yes, I'm concerned on the Bucks still winning the Eastern Conference. I am concerned because you see these other teams rising from the occasion. They are playing better. You got the unknowns playing better, like T.J. Warren. You even got the young Bucks playing in Miami and Sixers. They're done. I think their problems is holding them up. And this Raptors team, they're balling. The Celtics, I can't forget about the Celtics. So I'm very concerned about this. Even though I still got the win in the Eastern Conference, but I'm a little concerned about like who they go play up against in this playoffs, Trey. I really am. I really am, man.
Now you're concerned. I've been telling you I don't think the Bucks are going to be in the finals.
Yeah. I mean, even though they locked in the number one seed, they still got other games to play. And you got to watch those games and to see, like, oh, what's the Bucks' weakness? And is the other team going to catch along with this weakness of what they're showing? Like, that plays a key part, too, man. And I just think the Bucks, they have to get it together in order to be the top dog in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, because when you look at the bench, the Mavericks, they had better bench production than the Milwaukee Bucks. in this matchup. So that matters. You know, you want to be able to have some production off your bench. That way you can, you know, because Giannis is going to play some extended minutes in the playoffs. Middleton will as well. But you want to have some production off the bench when you got to sit Giannis and Middleton for a few minutes in a playoff game. Like Ilyasova and Williams and George Hill and Kyle Korver, they're going to be expected to give you some type of production for the Milwaukee Bucks. You know, Kyle Korver, he's a knockdown shooter. George Hill, you know, he can run the point guard for your team. And, you know, he can be a facilitator. So you're going to need some production from your bench as you're the Milwaukee Bucks. I already told you, I don't think the Bucks are going to win the East. I don't. I think there's multiple teams in the East that can beat the Bucks in a playoff series. The Boston Celtics, I believe, they can beat the Milwaukee Bucks in a playoff series. You know why? Because they got four players that can create a shot off the dribble, and Gordon Hayward, Kemba Walker, Jaylen Brown, and Jason Tatum. I love the Boston Celtics as a team. And the other night, they sent the message to the rest of the NBA when they blew out the Toronto Raptors by 40. They beat them by – it might not have been 40. I might have been hyped up. It was close. It was close. But they sent the message to the rest of the league. We are ready for the playoffs, and we are coming. And they got studs on their team, and they're young. And also, I love Brad Stevens as a coach, one of the best coaches we have in the NBA. If Kemba Walker can play at a high level come playoff time, watch out for the Celtics. The Miami Heat, last week, although they lost that game to the Bucks, Clarence, at one point in that game, they were up 23 on Giannis.
24.
Yeah, they were up. They were up a large margin at one point. You got to look out for the Miami Heat because the Miami Heat, they have shooters. They have shooters. Yeah. Dustin Robinson be shooting the lights out with the basketball. You got a pit bull and Jimmy Butler coming at you the entire game. And I like Bam Adebayo as well down that low post. And a nice defensive threat for the Miami Heat. And we all know Coach Spoelstra is a great coach in the NBA. Yes, I said great, and I don't throw that word around too often, but he wouldn't be the coach for the Miami Heat still if Pat Riley didn't have the confidence in him to be able to coach a team deep in the playoffs. So watch out for the Miami Heat. And then also in the East, you got to look out for the Toronto Raptors. We still think Toronto is a team that got to be reckoned with. They are the reigning NBA champions, and they have a great coach in Nick Nurse. They got veterans like Serge Ibaka and Gasol on their team that knows what the playoffs are all about. You got an up-and-coming star in Siakam and a point guard in Kyle Lowry that can hit some timely big shots for your team. So I think there are at least three teams in the East that can knock off the Bucks. That's the Miami Heat, that's the Boston Celtics, and that's the Toronto Raptors. I would have said the Philadelphia 76ers, but they're done now that Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons are out.
Yeah, now you agree with me now that the Sixers are done. But definitely we got to move on, man. So let's transition to back to the NFL, Mr. Larkins. As we got into this Dallas Cowboys topic, you know, Amari Cooper, he stated that the Dallas Cowboys' expectation is to have three wide receivers with at least 1,000 yards. The last time that a team that had three receivers with 1,000 yards was the 2008 Arizona Cardinals with Larry Fitzgerald, Anquan Bowen, and Steve Breaston. Both all had 1,000 yards. And believe it or not, Fitzgerald had the most with 1,400. Bowden had 1,100. And Breaston just got to 1,000 yards. And I think it's impressive. Are you buying in what Amari Cooper's selling?
No, I'm not buying what Amari Cooper's trying to sell. And I don't think Amari Cooper should want his team to have three 1,000-yard receivers. And here's the reason why. I believe if you got three 1,000-yard receivers on your team, that means you're trailing a lot in football games. That means Dak Prescott is going to be dropping back to pass 25, 30, 35 times a game, and that's a recipe for disaster for your Dallas Cowboys, Amari Cooper. I think this team, in order for this team to get back to where they want to get back to, and that's the playoffs, and back at the top of the NFC East, you have to hand the football off to Ezekiel Elliott. Last year, Zeke had 301 carries, 1,357 rushing yards. He had 12 rushing touchdowns, which wasn't great. But I think last year, Zeke had a down year.
Wasn't great.
No, you think that's not great. That's not
for 12 touchdowns? 12 touchdowns? I think that's solid right there.
It's okay. I expect Zeke to have at least 15. He has that kind of capability. But that's what I want to say. last year, most people think that was a down year for Zeke. They said it was a down year. Zeke didn't produce like he has in previous years. So I believe if the Cowboys want to get back to their ultimate goal, get back to the playoffs, make some noise, and win the division, you have to hand the football off to Zeke Elliott. I think Amari Cooper really, really need to be careful about what he's wishing for. Because if the Cowboys have three receivers over 1,000 yards, I don't think that's a recipe necessarily for wins for this team. I think this team is built to run the football, and that's where your bread and butter is going to be if you're a Cowboys fan or if you're a Cowboys member on that team.
Okay, I like that response. Let me tell you this. The last, like, I think it's possible, but then it's not. But anything is possible in the NFL. I mean, the last three trio that at least had 900 yards was the 2019 LA Chargers. That was with Mike Williams, Keenan Allen, and Alex Eckler. Eckler had 900 receiving, almost 1,000 yards right there. And both of the receivers had 1,000 yards right then and there. I think this type of expectation is something exciting because you got a new head coach, an offensive mind coach, and Mike McCarthy and to shift things up, utilize every player on his team. And I think this is probably a high expectation. I will say this is probably like a high expectation because when you want three receivers with 1K, I honestly can see two players on that out of the three with a 1,000 yard season. And I see Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb. Michael Gallup, I've seen some signs from him, but I think that he still needs to get more worked on. But this expectation should make this team even better because, believe it or not, they're probably the most talented team in the NFL, like, to be honest. That team is full of loaded players, like great players on that team, offense side and defense. They're balanced. And I think with this expectation, it should make them even better. Hell, they should win the NFC East in the next 3 years.
Yeah, certainly. I completely agree with you. And then when you look at his production, you're right. I think 12 touchdowns, it wasn't bad for Zeke Elliott last year.
Yeah, it wasn't.
2016, he had 15 touchdowns. That's why I said I expect Zeke to at least rush for 15 touchdowns because he has that kind of capability. You agree with that, right?
Yeah, I agree with that.
He had 15 touchdowns in 2016. 2017, he only had 7 touchdowns. 2018, he only had 6. Last year, he had 12. So this last year was his, second most rushing touchdowns of his career so far. So I agree with you. 12 wasn't necessarily bad, but I think he can get 15if he's having a great year. But overall,
think about it though. The more all these running backs probably only get over more than 11 touchdowns in the season. So I think this is still good for him, even though he got a talented team around.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you on that. And then one thing about Zeke too, I want to see. And he did pretty decent last year, but he had 54 receptions out of the backfield. I want to see Ezekiel Elliott be a reliable target for Dak Prescott to be able to throw the ball to in the flat, make some guys miss in the open field, and get some first downs for the Dallas Cowboys. So I think Ezekiel Elliott honestly is an underrated pass catcher out of the backfield. He doesn't catch the ball out of the backfield like Christian McCaffrey. You know he doesn't do that.
Alvin Kamara,
but he's capable of doing it. He's capable of doing it. So I want to see more of that from Ezekiel Elliott and this Dallas Cowboys offense. Let me ask you another question on this topic before we move on.
I agree.
Do you believe that Mike McCarthy believes in Dak Prescott?
Oh, that's a tough question right there. I mean, I ain't seen no articles that he wouldn't believe in him. He just want him to play and perform. But I think Mike McCarthy does believe in Dak Prescott because he sees the confidence in Prescott that he probably hasn't seen in any other quarterback. He might think different of Dak Prescott. I mean, believe it or not, I think him and Dak Prescott, they're going to fit right well together because they both want to win. They both want to change the culture in the Cowboys organization. They want to bring the playoffs and the Lombardi Trophy back to Dallas. Like, so Mike McCarthy already gives them that winning mentality in Dallas because he's a winner, a winning coach in himself. And he wants to come in Dallas to help Prescott and them turn into winners. But I think he's getting real comfortable with him because he knows the team is balanced enough to win the next couple years. And I think when Dak Prescott honestly can get their contract, his contract even fixed up and situated done, then they gonna make magic in a few years.
Yeah, I disagree. I don't believe that Mike McCarthy believes in Dak Prescott, because you got to think about it, Clarence. Mike McCarthy, in his career, he's coached legendary quarterbacks in Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, and now he's downgraded to Dak Prescott. Although last year Dak Prescott had a good year according to his standards, 30 touchdowns, 11 interceptions, had close to 5,000 passing yards, completed 65% of his passes. He had a good year last year, but like I told you on previous shows, a lot of those statistical numbers that Dak Prescott was putting up, they were when the Dallas Cowboys were trailing on the scoreboard. Therefore, teams were in prevent defense, and they let the Cowboys gain yardage and put up points on the board late in games. So I think that can be misleading, you know, looking at the statistical numbers.
Isn't it like bad calling on the defensive side, playing the prevent and let them
– if you already up – if you – listen, last year at one point, my Packers was up 31-3 on the Cowboys. We already up 28 points. At this point, we can play a little bit of prevent defense. So that's why I said last year, Dak's statistical season, although it was good on his standards, it could be misleading. I don't think Mike McCarthy believes in Dak Prescott, because I don't think Mike McCarthy was even in Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones' office campaigning for them to come up with a deal with Dak Prescott. He's had Aaron Rodgers. He's had Brett Favre. He has a high standard of quarterback play that he's accustomed to seeing. I don't think he believes Dak Prescott is that dude. Me personally, I'm not saying Dak Prescott's a scrub. I don't think Mike McCarthy thinks he's a scrub. I'm just looking at the quarterbacks that he's coached previously and comparing them to Dak Prescott, and it's a downgrade. It's like it's just the way
it is. It's a downgrade?
Are you kidding me? Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre, and Dak Prescott? Significant drop-off. Significant. This ain't Carson Wentz. Like, come on now.
But think about it, though. He's walking into an organization that's balanced out on the team, man. So it's going to be a lot of good changes in the Dallas organization, because, one, they got a winning coach, and they got a good team around them. I think them two coming together, they're going to be a good team in the NFL. That might be one of the best teams in the NFL if everything clicks together, man. I'm taking a bet.
So let me explain something to you real quick before we move on to the next topic. Right. Whenever you are a coach and you get the job and you accept the job and you have a star player, you're supposed to call your star player ASAP and have a conversation with him. If let's just say if the Kansas City Chiefs, if Andy Reid decided he wanted to retire. And he wanted to move on to different things in his life. He didn't want to coach the NFL anymore. Whatever coach that you bring in for the Kansas City Chiefs, guess who the first person in the organization who they're going to call? Patrick Mahomes. If you take any job, if you have a star quarterback or a quarterback that's relevant that you believe is that dude, you're going to call that quarterback. If Bill O'Brien gets fired by the Houston Texans and they bring in a new coach, guess who the first person is going to get called by? Guess who the first person is going to get that call from that new coach? Guess who's going to be? Deshaun Watson. When you take over the Seattle Seahawks, if Pete Carroll decides to retire, the coach is calling Russell Wilson first. I haven't gotten any reports or seen anything to where Mike McCarthy and Dak Prescott has had an extended conversation. Therefore, me personally, I don't believe Mike McCarthy believes in Dak Prescott as being the guy that could get the Cowboys back to the Super Bowl.
You know, time will tell, man. Time will tell. And I'm looking at their roster right now. Their first game at the LA Rams, so that's gonna be a test right there on the road early to see how he can handle adversity with Dak Prescott. So that's going to be something to watch, Trey. That's going to be something to watch right real quick, man. But, hey, we got to move on, man. So we're moving on in Philly. So, you know, earlier in the game yesterday, Joel Embiid, he suffered from a left ankle injury earlier in the game. Played 6 minutes in the game, and it was a devastating loss. And before then, Ben Simmons had a knee problem. You know, he just had the surgery today, and you'll hear some evaluation in the next 2 weeks. But I want to ask you this. Like, Is this the last time that Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid ever go play with each other?
Yes, I think the Philadelphia 76ers need to break up this duo between Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. For whatever reason, Clarence, it just isn't working out. And we always, every single week, me and you talk about it. We talk about it just amongst ourselves, texting or on the phone or via Facebook Messenger. We always talk about the Sixers, all this talent that the Sixers have. And I think one of the mistakes that the Sixers made was letting Jimmy Butler walk out that door and take his talents to South Beach. I think Jimmy Butler kept that team together and was by far the leader on that Philadelphia 76ers team. Mm-hmm. When I look at Ben Simmons, he deals with the Kardashians. So sometimes I think Ben Simmons in the offseason is a little bit distracted. That's why he hasn't been able to have a consistent jump shot on display on the floor. I think he's a little bit distracted, Clarence. We've seen multiple, celebrities deal with the Kardashians, and they're a little bit distracted. My man Lamar Odom, shout out to Lamar, won a championship with the Lakers back in the day. He was with Khloe Kardashian. He was distracted as well off the floor. Won't get into it, but I love my man Lamar. So when you deal with the Kardashians, you are distracted. Then when I get to Joel Embiid, I love Joel Embiid. I think Joel Embiid is the best big man in the game when he is playing at an elite level and taking the game serious. But that last part, from what I just said, is the most important part. Sometimes I think Joel Embiid doesn't take the game very serious, Clarence. Sometimes I think he's out of shape and he can't get up and down the basketball court at a fast pace.
I agree.
And that's my biggest issue that I have with Joel Embiid. He has the talent and he has the upside to be a top five player in the NBA. But sometimes I question whether or not he is taking it very serious. I remember last year after Kawhi hit that dagger three-point shot that sent Joel Embiid and the Sixers home, I saw Joel Embiid crying in the tunnel. Even though people were making fun of him for crying, Clarence, that was a moment that I thought, all right, at least he's taking it a little bit serious, though. He's taking losing hard. But overall, I think Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, they're a duo, in my opinion. They don't necessarily play well together. And also, when you look at the coach and Brett Brown, I don't like Brett Brown as a coach with the Sixers. If you're going to make a change, you have to either break up Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, or you have to make a coaching change, because I don't think Brett Brown is the kind of coach that can lead the Sixers to an NBA championship. So yeah. I think you have to make a move in some kind of capacity. You have to make a move.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely got to make a move. And I've been hearing a lot of sources that the Cleveland Cavaliers are building a package deal to land Ben Simmons this fall on the Cleveland Cavaliers roster, which I think that might get some buzz around the NBA. And honestly, these two, they haven't been working. It hasn't been working out. These players are supposed to be probably the best duo in the NBA, in the Eastern Conference. They're supposed to own the Eastern Conference. Right then and there. But it was lack of health, lack of chemistry, and lack of coaching, man. And I think that plays a part in that organization why they're not successful, man. I don't think them three right there, I just named all the reasons why they're not a successful organization, and possibility this might be their last game playing with each other. I do agree. I think this might be their last game playing with each other, because something has to change if they want to start winning. You have to look who's more valuable, Ben Simmons or Joel Embiid.
I was going to ask you that real quick before we move on. If you had to choose which player to build your team around, would it be Ben Simmons or Joel Embiid?
I'm building around Joel Embiid, because one, he's the most dominant center in the NBA right now. And two, he does have more upside. And
Wait a minute. You said Jokic was better than Embiid.
Well, I said one of the best. One of the best centers in the league.
You said he's the best.
Well, I said one of the best. He's one of the best centers in the league. I give Joe, I'm gonna be honest.
Joe Embiid better than Jokic, but carry on.
That's another topic for another day, but I'm just being honest. Like, I'm being honest. He has the more upside than Ben Simmons. And another thing, he shoots the three better than Ben Simmons. He shoots the three ball better than Ben Simmons. Like, and for Ben Simmons, like, he's dominant without a three ball. He really is. He can facilitate, score, play defense. I honestly thought he was coming up for defensive player of the year, but he got injured. But Embiid, he's more dominant. He's more dominant, like, because you get more out of him, and you can necessarily find pieces around him to correlate with his style of play. And for him, he wants the ball in his hand. He wants the ball in his hand in big times. I believe he should have the ball in his hand big time because you is the process. We trust the process. We waited for this process for a long time. And I think at this moment, he needs to be showing that why he is the process. But unfortunately, he goes down with a right ankle injury. So we probably won't be able to see that until next season. But yeah. I truly believe that he's more valuable than Ben Simmons because the simple fact being, like, he brings more. He has more upside. And he shoots the ball more better than Ben Simmons. He might as well say he's more reliable on the three ball more than Ben Simmons.
Yeah, I agree with you. If I had to pick one of these two players to build around, I'm building around Joel Embiid. I think when you look at Joel Embiid's career, he's averaged 24 points per game, 48% from the field. You know what I mean? Like, he has, what, 3 assists on his career? Not great, but I think he's a nice passing big man. He'll get better and improve on that part of his game. Mm-hmm. That's also coaching. I would expect Brett Brown to demand Joel Embiid to get his big butt down there in the post, get more in shape, and stop going out on the perimeter so much. See, it's so funny we talk about the Sixers. What we want from Ben Simmons, we get from Joel Embiid. I don't think Joel Embiid should be shooting as many threes as he shoots, Clarence. I think Joel Embiid should be in the paint and putting up buckets and dominating down in the low post. And Ben Simmons, it ain't even the fact that he doesn't hit perimeter shots. He doesn't even attempt perimeter shots. That's the problem.
Yeah.
It's just amazing how this team has
not even mid-ranges.
Not even mid-ranges. But real quick, we'll talk about that later on in the week. But before we get out of here, Clarence, everybody remember go and follow Wise Guys on Twitter, WiseGuys_H, also on Facebook, Wise Guys, and that's Wise Guys on Instagram with These Guys Know Sports. Wednesday show, we have a special guest appearance from Kelsey Nicole Nelson. She's an award-winning host, reporter from Fox Sports. She's done work with the Big East. She's done work in DMV Sports Media Person of the Year. She's won multiple awards. So we're excited to have her on the show on Wednesday as a guest, Clarence.
I'm definitely excited for Ms. Nelson to get on the show, man. Oh, it's Friday. Oh, never mind. Sorry, guys. It's Friday.
Oh, it's Friday. Okay, it's Friday.
Oh, you're lucky, fans, and all my viewers. Y'all lucky, man.
We'll see y'all Wednesday night. Have a good one.